And in case number 87588, in the matter of JB, a minor, are the parties ready to proceed? Okay, then. All right, counsel, come on up. And each side has 15 minutes each for oral argument today. How much time would you like to reserve for, would you like to reserve some time for rebuttal?
I would be requesting to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay. And so the clock is set for your full 15 minutes. It'll be counting down. When it gets down to the 3 minute mark, there'll be a yellow light will come on and you'll hear a tone, but the clock keeps running down as long as you're still there speaking.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Good afternoon, Chief Justice Kadish and members of the court. My name is Payal Patel, and I represent the Clark County District Attorney's Office on behalf of the Clark County Department of Family Services, who is a petitioner in this matter. Also with me is Joseph Reynolds, amicus curiae, on behalf of the Whipples, who are the current placement, and also Joseph Dahlia, who represents the real party in interest, JB. I will be allocating, with permission of the court, I will be allocating 1 minute to Mr. Reynolds to address the issue of the evidentiary hearing and what would have been proffered by the Whipples had an evidentiary hearing been held. And Mr. Dahlia, I will be allocating to him 3 minutes to address the issue of fictive kin as placement and the issue of representation of JB at the hearing.
So their 4 minutes is coming out of the 12 minutes before rebuttal.
Yes, Your Honor.
Got it. Okay, go on.
Your Honor, members of the court, this case is in front of this court on an issue of the district court abusing its discretion in not holding an evidentiary hearing to make a decision on credibility of witnesses and best interest of the real party in interest, the child, JB. To provide brief facts and what happened in this case, JB was born on January
8th. Could we just skip to, how would you define fictive kin?
By definition, in 432B, a fictive kin, by definition, is a person who has a significant relationship with the child.
So can there ever be fictive kin with an infant placement?
The concern, Your Honor, in this case is that if a fictive kin is not designated for a newborn child, the purpose of fictive kin, the spirit of the law, is to ensure that we are looking at persons who have some sort of connection to the family to ensure that there is support for reunification as the beginning of these cases start with reunification. The purpose of fictive kin, just like family, is to ensure that children have somebody that they know and they're not placed in an unknown placement such as a foster home.
But how does that work when it's a newborn?
In most cases, what happens is we look at family friends, a person that has a connection to the family, a person that knows of the parent, knows of whether it be the paternal side or maternal side, that allows that child to have a connection to the relatives. For example, in this case, the fictive kin was a friend, the Whipples, of the maternal side of the family. That placement was looked at because at the beginning of the case, there were no relatives that were available to take placement. The only relative that the father put forward, the paternal grandfather, lived in Illinois. And per NRS 127.330, an interstate compact on the placement of children had to have been done before we could place with the paternal grandfather.
All right, but doesn't the statute define fictive kin in terms of the child having a relationship with the placement?
Yes, Your Honor, that is correct. It does in the statute. However, there's no age limitation. There's no year limitation that has been provided in the statute, and in that sense, it is ambiguous because there's not the significant relationship has to be a child for, let's just say, a teenager or The child has to be older than 5 years old. And so when it says significant relationship, there is still not a restriction or a limitation that's been put into that definition.
So your position would be that, I guess, for an infant, that then it would be the relationship that the caretaker, I mean, it would have to be, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
So you would say, sorry, you would say that someone who is a friend, say a close friend of the family, but obviously hasn't spent time with the infant who was just born, is that considered someone who has a significant emotional and positive relationship with the child within the meaning of the fictive kin definition?
I think based on the spirit of the law, the state's position would be that it does, as that family friend can provide a connection to the biological family, because fictive kin usually comes through a name that's been provided by the parent, the mother or the father in the case, or somebody on the maternal side or the paternal side. So there is an assurance that there is some connection that's being made to the family that can help support the reunification process.
So, for instance, if a mother has a close friend that goes through pregnancy with her and attends classes with her and maybe is present for the child's birth, you would argue that that person maybe has a fictive kin type of relationship with a newborn?
Correct, Your Honor.
I mean, arguably a newborn, other than the mother that's carrying the child, doesn't really have a relationship with anybody, even the father, until they're born and have an opportunity to interact with people.
Correct. And I think the concern ends up being that with that position, if you have a newborn, which oftentimes a lot of our cases come out of newborn children, and the concern becomes that if that newborn we cannot say that this person's a fictive kin if that person's also not licensed. It's either relative or straight to foster care. And so when you have the option of a foster placement, who is somebody that really nobody knows, right? The paternal side doesn't know, the maternal side doesn't know. And there's a choice between that and somebody that's helped with the pregnancy, somebody who knows the family, somebody's going to say, you know, we're going to support reunification, then the right choice under the spirit of the law would be to put that family friend who is going to be somebody at least that the parent knows and feels comfortable with.
So fictive kin does not have to have a foster license. And in fact, that's what happened here, right? The Whipples were not licensed foster parents.
They were not licensed foster parents when JB was placed with them upon birth and discharged from the hospital. They later became licensed.
Did they have to?
They do not have to. And as Your Honor, it's provided in the record, on March 28, 2023, the district court signed an order once the child was made a legal ward of the court, signed an order that was titled Out-of-Home Placement Order, Unlicensed Fictive Kin. The body of that order says that the child has been placed with the Whipples, who are a fictive kin to the child. And that court, early on in the case, the district court designated them as fictive kin. And that is what the parties relied on moving forward in determining that they are fictive kin.
So then, skipping ahead then, let's assume for the moment they are fictive kin. In determining who should have priority in placement, the statute provides for relatives and even specifically calling out grandparents, relatives, or fictive kin. Is your position that then relatives and fictive kin are on the same priority level?
Yes. Okay. According to 432B 390, which is the initial placement of children, 432B 550, all of those statutes put family, relatives, and fictive kin on the same line. After that comes licensed foster home. However, the fictive kin and relative are on the same line after fictive kin is a comma and then says that are suitable. So the suitability goes towards the fictive kin and the relative, who are on the same level in hierarchy and placement.
So it would be a determination by the court of which placement was the most suitable for considering the best interests of the child.
Correct, and that best interest of the child is paramount, as this court has found in Mario C. and Philip R., that once that familial preference has been determined, especially in cases where a child is initially placed with a non-family member and then a family member comes forward, in both cases, this honorable court has emphasized that the paramount, the main consideration has to be the child's best interest, and an evidentiary hearing needs to be held to determine what the child's best interest is. The analysis should not stop at familial preference. And in this case, the district court stopped right at familial preference. The district court found that there is a grandfather. The grandfather has familial preference, and that is where the analysis ends. It was then said by the district court that it is always in a child's best interest to be placed with family. And that was done without taking any evidence, without any testimony, without any cross-examination, when there were quite a few issues of fact that needed to be presented in the form of an evidentiary hearing to analyze best interest.
Might want to go to your colleagues. Yes.
And with that, I will pass it on to Mr. Reynolds. Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the court, Chief Justice Kadish and members of the court, Joe Reynolds on behalf of Amicus Curie, Becky, and Jay Whipple. And thank you for granting the Whipple's request to participate in this matter as Amicus Curie. Three points for the court's consideration. First, it's the position of the Whipples that under NRS 432B 457, they had an unqualified statutory right to be heard at any hearing before the district court in this matter, where it says, again, under 432B, 457, subsection 1, that any hearing will allow a person of special interest to be heard before a placement of a child is made. They are defined by law as a foster parent who is defined as having a special interest in this matter. Had they been heard, and while the Amicus Curie petition sets forth that Jay was willing to testify, Becky was there as well. She was prepared to testify to the court, and this is just a proffer for the court's consideration. We understand this is an evidence in the record, but had an evidentiary...
If it's not in the record, then we don't want to probably hear it right now. But let me ask you a question. If we somehow assume that the Whipples were not fictive kin at the time of the placement, do you believe that a fictive kin relationship can develop during the course of a placement?
Absolutely, Your Honor, and it has in this case. I believe my time is up. thank you. I'll pass this to Mr. Dahlia. Thank you, Your Honor.
Nice talking to you.
See the clock's running. I'll be quick. Thank you, Your Honors, and may it please the Court, Joseph Dahlia, pro bono legal counsel on behalf of the minor JB. I join the oral arguments presented by the State and Amicus Counsel and would like to supplement as the issues of fictive kin and my client's right to receive a voice via substituted judgment. The core question before this Court, as some of you have asked, is whether, as to fictive kin, as whether the Whipple's initial placement status should foreclose them from being deemed JB's fictive kin. On this point, we believe the statutory language is clear. The legislature, in defining fictive kin, made no indication that an initial placement for a newborn should be uniquely disadvantaged in achieving fictive kin status and the corresponding placement preference referenced by the state. The statute merely requires a significant emotional bond and positive relationship between the minor and the would-be fictive kin. And in that regard, neither the district court nor counsel for JB's father have argued that the Whipples have an insufficient bond with JB to establish that nexus. The sole disqualifying factor, according to the district court, is the Whipple status as initial placement as a newborn, which essentially punishes both the Whipples and JB because they stepped up too early in the process. That can't possibly have been the legislature's intent to uniquely punish those who step up and take care of newborns at the hospital. In this case, On March 28th, the district court even recognized that the Whipples were being assigned placement as fictive kin. At that point, they'd had care and custody of JB for 2.5 months.
Time's running out. Why weren't you at the hearing?
Oh, I don't practice in this area. I'm a pro bono counsel working with Legal Aid Center. So I wasn't at the hearing. I wasn't yet up to speed on the case.
Did you know that the hearing was that day?
I was made aware in advance, and I had asked for a continuance because I was not able to adequately represent my client.
Who did you ask for a continuance?
The counsel for JB's father.
Okay. Did you ask the court to continue the hearing?
I did not. I apologize. I'm not even a litigator by trade. This is a first for me, so I was not up to speed on the exact procedure.
So you were appointed as a pro bono attorney through the Legal Aid Center.
That's correct.
But if I understand correctly, you're not an employee of Legal Aid Center.
I'm not. No, no.
Okay.
And I was in the process of getting it. My notice of appearance wasn't even filed until October 30th. So.
Okay.
Is that all? Preserve the remaining 7 seconds.
Thank you. All right. We're asking a lot of questions today. I'll give you guys an extra 2 minutes. You figure out what you're going to do with it, and I'll give respondents similarly an extra 2 minutes. Okay. There you go.
Thank you. May it please the court of Barrett Grigsby for the real party in interest, the father, Miles Stano Jr. Just to pick up where counsel left off, one of the issues raised by the state is that should the court have proceeded with the October 12th hearing with JB's counsel not being present, there was no motion for continuance filed by counsel. Counsel had made an appearance in March of 2023 and then proceeded to miss the next 9 hearings. Was not present at the October 12th hearing. The only representations that were made by the state, and I quote, and it's appellant's supplemental exhibits AA144, Ms. Quinlan stated there was a pro bono cap assigned. I did reach out last week.
Let me ask you a question, counsel.
Okay.
When we have an infant who has no ability to complain, ask for a different lawyer, wouldn't the better course of action be for the court to take some action to ensure that there is a lawyer there for the infant?
There was a lawyer that was assigned. The court has no way to make the attorney appear at the hearing.
Well, there was a request.
To physically.
Let me just go there a second.
It's frustrating, but they do. Sorry.
They'd reached out. The state had reached out and requested a continuance, and you wouldn't stipulate.
The state reached out, not the counsel. So, and this was prior to the hearing. So upon knowing there was no stipulation to a continuance, JB's counsel should have filed a motion to continue or appear.
Judge Bell's best practice here in this particular situation, it just seems...
There's also the issue of delay. There was an ICPC that was approved in August, which is only good for 6 months.
Okay, but I just don't think that answers my question. So when you have a child that doesn't have any ability to control what is going on with counsel or whether counsel is showing up, wouldn't it have been a better practice for the court to use the ability that it had, for example, issue an order to show cause, to make sure that the counsel showed up? I mean, you continue the hearing 2 days, issue an order to show cause, and tell the lawyer to be there, or else?
The court could have done that, but there was no... And if you look through the transcripts from the October 12th hearing, once the... No one, not the state, not... Anyone else present stated that the court shouldn't proceed without JB's counsel being present.
So what did JB say about that? What did JB say about that?
Unfortunately, we have a nonverbal child, so even with having representation there, it wouldn't have been JB's personal voice making...
Right, but JB didn't have the option to express any concern about JB's counsel not appearing, right?
That's correct.
Okay.
think Justice Bell's question, it's not about you, right? It's not about the state. It's not about JB's counsel. We're talking about the idea that a court, right, before the court sets in judgment all this, and you got free reign to dime out the court if you want, right? Should the court have done something? And it can be very frustrating, understanding the delays. Everybody's there. But should the court have said, we don't have counsel here on behalf of a nonverbal infant child, I'm not going to do this hearing until we get that situation resolved?
Under the circumstances, no, because at that point we have a ICPC that's approved with family. We have a foster placement, and I'll address the fictive kin issue in a minute, but we have...
Well, let's go to that, because how do we call that a foster placement when the order placing the child is for unlicensed fictive kin?
We look at the statute, which is 432B.0657, that states a fictive kin is a person who is not related by blood to a child, but who has a significant emotional and positive relationship with the child. So
how could Family Services place with this family that was unlicensed if they were not fictive kin? Because that's the order the judge signed.
I don't believe that they should have placed it as a fictive kin placement, because this placement...
But they couldn't place it any other... They couldn't place the child with this family otherwise because they were not licensed.
And I don't believe that they should have placed with this family under by calling them fictive kin. And this family was not someone that was presented by the mother or the father. This family...
You would agree, though, that the statute equates, it's the same level of preference, fictive kin and a relative under our statutory scheme. So the district judge's analysis that a relative gets preference automatically is simply incorrect if you credit that this was a fictive kin relationship either originally or as developed.
If you credit that as a fictive kin placement, yes.
So you agree with me that the statute gives an equal, like they're in the same paragraph of the same statute in this order of priority. It's up to the judge to determine when they have a fictive kin and a relative which placement is in the best interest of the child, right?
I think you can look at it both ways, because the statute says family or fictive kin. So if you look at, which it doesn't say fictive kin or family, so I think when you have the family first.
But it's in a series of numbered paragraphs, and that's in paragraph number 2.
Yes.
So grammatically, they'd be on a par with one another. They're just a preference over foster parents, for example.
Yes. So I believe that they do come above any foster parents, which I believe the Whipples are.
That the judge's determination at the hearing was, as a matter of law, he was comfortable going ahead because it was going to go to, the only choice he had was fictive kin or a relative, right? And so he dispensed with needing an attorney there for the child?
Well, what the judge, and if you look at the transcripts, what the judge looked at was, is this a fictive kin placement? And said, no, it's not.
Well, that's very interesting, since he signed an order saying that it was a fictive kin placement. I don't understand that at all.
Well, usually, you know, the judges have multiple hearings and they're signing orders. And yes, the order does say that. I don't disagree with that. But the topic of whether this family is fictive kin was never brought up until that
hearing.
Of course
it was. He had to make that finding for the child to be placed there in the first place because they were not a licensed foster home.
Well, the judge didn't actually make the placement there. The placement was already made. When we look at the orders in the case, the judge had made placement at the hospital at the PC hearing, and it was the department that made the placement with the Whipples, and it was a few months after that they came and told the judge that, hey, this is the placement we made, and it's fictive kin placement. And the judge just rubber stamped this,
the placement. So by that time, the child had been with the Whipples for 3 months or more.
Yes, they were, believed.
And do you dispute that a fictive kin relationship couldn't have grown to exist in that span of time?
Yes, I disagree, because based on the statute, the fictive kin placement, the fictive kin relationship has to be there prior to the placement of the child, which, because if we're saying fictive kin relationship can develop, then by that definition, all foster parents would then be fictive kin, because once the child is placed there, is there for a period of time, then that placement then would become fictive kin and would no longer be a foster placement.
But this particular, this particular placement was placed as fictive kin before they were a licensed foster home. So this is the opposite chronology.
It's the placement that was made by the department. So when the initial protective custody hearing happened, everyone came before the court. The Whipples weren't mentioned as a placement. So the court did not make a placement with the Whipples.
The court approved the placement with the Whipples and signed an order for the placement indicating it was fictive kin.
Months after the placement was made, yes. So this wasn't a, because state's arguing that the court should hold, when there's the placement change, the court should hold a hearing, evidentiary hearing, take evidence. Court made a placement at the hospital. There was no evidentiary hearing held when the placement was moved to the Whipples. So if their argument is that every time a placement is changed, the court needs to make certain findings, then they should have been done when the placement was moved from the hospital to the Whipples. And in the course of a child being in foster care, there are multiple placement changes, which DFS makes without getting permission from the court. So to say it needs to be done every time, I don't think that's even possible with the court's calendar.
But counsel, does a fictive kin, like who picks fictive kin? So a newborn doesn't pick their fictive kin any more than a one-year-old does. I mean, that's the community that the family is giving to the child. That's their fictive kin, family, friends, family. The kids don't pick that to some extent. So to say that it has to, well, what do you think about that concept? As if they're 6 months old and you've dropped by and dropped off a gift, now you're fictive kin, but if the baby's a newborn, you can't be fictive kin because they didn't pick you.
Well, I think the statute makes it clear that fictive kin is someone, the child. The child has a significant emotional and positive relationship.
So a newborn cannot have fictive kin.
I agree with that. I don't think a newborn can, because the child has, because the whole point of the statute is that the child's not going to a stranger. For a newborn, anyone other than parents is going to be a stranger.
Well, I guess, maybe the parents are strangers too. I don't know.
If a newborn can't have fictive kin, and the court says fictive kin cannot be developed during placement, how do we get fictive kin at the time that they're making this decision?
I don't think
a newborn's been taken and they've been placed somewhere. So how can a newborn ever have anybody else that could be fictive kin?
Well, usually where I've seen that happen is, you know, child's placed wherever, they develop relationships with daycare, with other people, where we've had placement changes where it's like a friend of the foster parents that the child has grown to know and develop a relationship with. So I think it has to be the child and the newborn. You cannot have a fictive kin.
So family services' only option when there's a newborn is to either place with family or put a newborn in foster care instead of the potential to place them with a close family friend. That's what you're saying.
I'm saying that you can't place with essentially a family friend because I believe it's different when it's somebody that, you know, mom or dad knows and they're part of the family. This was essentially a stranger to the parents as well. So this family isn't somebody the parents knew. It was just someone that the maternal grandmother recommended. So it's not even someone who's close to the parents. So in this case, no, you don't place with. And not saying that Whipples aren't a good placement. They've been great for JB, but they're not family. They don't, and they're not fictive kin where they get a preference for placement.
But to the extent you said the parents didn't even know them, so they're strangers to the parents, that's irrelevant from your position because a newborn can't have fictive kin, even if they're the parents' best friends. Because under your theory, newborn wouldn't have that relationship.
I think it's not my theory, it's the law. Because if the legislature wanted to say has a relationship with the child or child's family, that'd be different. I think the legislature has been clear that it's the relationship with the child.
So you would agree then that the parent's best friend at birth, they're not fictive kin, nobody is.
I agree.
Okay.
Where do you derive the position that legally fictive kin relationship cannot evolve during a placement?
Based on the statute.
What statute that? And where in it?
432B.0657. It specifically states child who has a significant and emotional relation has.
So you're relying on the past tense as the limitation?
Yes. It doesn't say has or will have.
It has to be pre-existing. But with an infant, what do you say to your colleague's argument that with an infant, of necessity, the spirit of the statute has to contemplate something that evolves? Because an infant is capable of developing a significant emotional relationship with someone they see every day who holds them and nurses, looks after their needs and feeds them and so on and so forth.
Because if we look at that, then every foster parent who takes a child upon birth becomes fictive kin then.
Not necessarily. But they could. And that is wrong. Why?
Because when in the statute, you have fictive kin and family and then foster parents. You don't have foster parents. The legislature hasn't said, hey, foster parents can become fictive kin. They've said fictive kin or family and then foster parents.
So is your position that determination is made at the time of placement?
Yes.
And then that can't change?
Yes. Okay. That you can't become fictive kin just because you have placement.
So I want to be clear before. With Justice Pickering's questions earlier, I want to be clear. It sounded like you were saying that you think the relatives have priority over even someone who is fictive kin. Is that your interpretation of the statute?
That I wouldn't say 100%, that the way I read the fictive kin statute, I'm 100% sure that you can't develop that relationship.
And then even if all you have is the one relative and no fictive kin in the picture, do you agree the court has to do a best interest analysis before making the placement?
And the judge did. So the judge did.
So is that yes?
Yes.
Okay.
I believe yes.
We good? Thank you. All right, rebuttal.
Members of the court, few things in response to the respondent's oral argument. One is that here we don't have a case of a foster placement that became a fictive kin. We have a newborn who was born and placed in a fictive kin home that the district court designated legally, and nobody challenged that order. It wasn't months after, it was 2 months after. And that is the designation that placement had from that time until now, and that is what the parties relate on. But even if this placement, the Whipples, was not a fictive kin, even if we want to say here today that they are foster placement, the law is clear. This honorable court has decided twice now, in Mario C. and in Philip R., that even if a familial preference is made, the second part of that analysis is to do a best interest analysis. And in fact, in Philip R., when the hearing master stated that they did a best interest analysis through an evidentiary hearing, this honorable court found that just saying that there is a biological connection, that there is a family connection, is not enough to say that a best interest analysis has been done. And that is what this honorable court found and reversed that case. In this case, there was reversible error. The district court abused its discretion and stopping at the familial preference, saying that this was a legal issue.
What is the effect of the ICPC analysis? Because the court seemed to like rely on, look, there was already been an evaluation of this person's fitness to take custody of the child.
So the ICPC is a, it's about 5-6 page evaluation. It looks at the home interviews. They call the state that it's coming from to ask if there is any background, any CPS.
Please finish. Okay.
They don't go into details as to suitability. They do it based on income, the home. They check out the home, who's living in the home, who's been interviewed. They don't go really further than that. So, for example, if you have a case where there's something in a grandparent's background where, for example, that there's concerns that this person had maybe abused or neglected their child, but it never came to CPS attention or it never came to a court-substantiated case, that is something that what ICPC would not catch. And that is the issue that was here, is that there were a lot of issues of fact. Had there been an evidentiary hearing, there were issues of fact that were in both pleadings that parties were disputing that go towards the credibility determination and best interest analysis. The ICPC is not enough to do a best interest analysis.
Sorry, did you?
Yeah, it's not on that subject, but what is your position with respect to whether or not an infant who is placed with someone can evolve a fictive kin relationship during that placement?
The state's position would be that if, like, a placement is a foster home, I guess by definition, it can evolve into a fictive kin. However, for purposes of title, such as the order that was filed in this case, the state would still title them as a licensed foster home. So if it came down to a preference, according to 432B550, I think the analysis would still be, if a family were to come forward, it would be family versus a licensed foster home. I think the portion of the developing that significant relationship would go into a best interest analysis to determine whether this child should be pulled from that home to be placed with family.
So how do you get, I understand we have the order 2 months in that designates the Whipples as fictive kin. How did they get there, given what you just said?
The unlicensed fictive kin?
Yeah.
So they were determined to be fictive kin if...
Because they were not a licensed foster care, so then they could become fictive kin? Is that how that happened?
No, so if the record has the preliminary protective hearing report, in that report it stated that there was a fictive kin, the Whipples. In fact, the child had already been placed with the Whipples before that initial hearing, the day before that initial hearing, and that their name was mentioned in that report. They were, from that moment on, titled as fictive kin because they were a family of the maternal side. So they stayed that way. And that's why when the order was signed, they were still fictive kin. They didn't develop into that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. All right, folks, thank you for your briefing and argument.